Hi, and welcome to How Not to Think, the podcast that gets us thinking about our thinking. I'm Dr. Howard Rankin, and I'm delighted to have on the show today as a guest, Tracy Lamori, who is an expert communicator, publicist, has a very interesting journey and story that I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to, and we're going to be discussing some important things about media promotion, communication, influence, manipulation. But welcome, Tracy. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Me,
I love the concept of the show because we all get stuck in our ways of thinking. We don't know what we don't know. We aren't thinking of what we shouldn't be thinking. So.
Yeah, it's tough. it is difficult because we're just so habitual and overwhelmed that it's very easy just to stay focused on what we really want to hear. And we'll get more into that. But first, tell the listeners, Tracy, about your journey and background and how you get to be here as a award-winning publicist.
It's a crazy journey. I'll try to tell it in 2 minutes or less, but basically I never thought about this as a career, and it is a elevated career that people think is awesome and full of VIP parties and travel, and that's all true. And I never thought of that as a trajectory. And I actually got here because I helped an innocent man who nobody was listening to on death row. And that's not the way, most business podcasts start, but that's not the way my business journey started. So I am now an international award-winning publicist working literally globally across industries for everybody from media people, creatives, to entrepreneurs, literally across industries. And I started by learning messaging. And I think the business, the interesting business part of you probably don't realize that you have passions or things you're doing in your personal life that you might actually be able to build a life you love out of and monetize and, not hate your job every day. And that's what happened to me. But I was really just on a 20-year campaign, an activist campaign, along with my husband, Jay Parkinson, to help Jimmy Dennis, who was on death row in Pennsylvania, factually innocent. And the world finally agreed 20 years into that journey, 25 years after he got on death row, released him in 2017. And by that time, my husband and I, our part of the journey had veered off here. We still talk every day. And I suddenly had a light bulb moment around 2012 when I was doing marketing and sales for things I didn't care about, just a generic paid job. Meanwhile, I developed these huge skills, learning to write my first press release, getting international attention, getting us on CNN, MSNBC, Court TV, Houston Chronicle, all these media you can name with no media background, no legal background, just the power of messaging, good messaging, putting it together. So I suddenly had a light bulb moment around 2012. Isn't that called a publicist? I think I could do that. And then I started very slowly just freelancing, building up, lucky enough to work with people like Rosa Parks' cousin, the historical.
Wow.
Yeah, her cousin came to me about her movie about Rosa Parks' life and legacy after. Building on things like that, doing excellent work for things I was so grateful to be a part of. And then eventually we formed the General Partnership, which is like a, just the two of us, like a solopreneurship, a general partnership for 5 years. And then here during COVID, we have actually upped our game and incorporated. So things are getting better and better all the time. We increasingly have, more and more interesting clients with a high profile.
That's awesome. Can you tell us a little bit more about the story of the guy on death row? Because it's fascinating. Yeah.
So he was convicted in 1991. Again, his name is Jimmy Dennis. If you Google him now, this week coming out in Philadelphia magazine, he's going to be the profile. And he was in Rolling Stone magazine, I guess it was a year ago in December, and we're quoted in that as well, in an article called How to Survive Death Row. So he was convicted of a murder of a young girl for her earrings, which he had nothing to do with, didn't know the victim, wasn't there, didn't fit the description. That's all, in the old days, we were trying to explain that to people. And, because it's difficult to get attention when someone was convicted. But we were just activists and we, didn't have any legal really way to get the word out other than this new thing that was called the internet. And so, we had initially found out about his case, we had a radio show years before that. We no longer had that. So we still were looking for forums and ways to make a difference. Early days of the internet, we were making a webpage, looking for things like anti-racism work that we could do and other things like that. And somehow we found Jimmy Dennis had paid somewhere for a little listing where everybody else was looking for pen pals or something where prisoners would get their voice out. And he said, I'm not looking for pen pal. Not looking for a girlfriend. I don't have a voice. I'm innocent help. I don't know who I'm looking for, but help. So I don't know to this day what caused my husband and myself to write to him. I have no idea. I have no idea. Because that was not part of our world. We were activists, yes. But to actually write to Death Row and to be like, okay, how can I help? Tell me about it. Is a big jump. So I still can't explain what happened there, but I'm so glad we did, because he wrote back 18, other than just the activist heart of kids in their 20s, you know, but he wrote back 18 pages, exactly our age, 18 pages, you know, single space, like both sides, mm-hmm. all the information, all the legal documentation, enough for it to galvanize us. And then we decided to start making a webpage, needed to get the attention of the world on it. How do you do that? So here we were in our basement after our day jobs. I was going to say Googling, but it was before Google. It was Alta Vista. So at Alta Vista, how do you write a press release? Press release templates for immediate release is a guy on death row. And so for 15 years, we did that. We kept on doing that. And we did it around the world. We'd get a little bit of attention here, a little bit there. Somebody else would get involved. Somebody would write an article. It would give him hope. He was like the project manager, though. He laughed now because a podcaster said to me, how'd you do that for 25 years? And I thought about it. And I was like, but you know what? He was the one in the center. I was like, okay, guys, how does he do that? How did he stay up every day when not just there 25 years in a cage being told you're going to get killed, but no respect. Like, we are allowed to kill you. We're going to kill you. And nobody's going to care. That does a number on your self-esteem. But he's a super strong person and fascinating. And I'm dealing with PTSD and everything. But yeah, so that's our story. And by the time he got out, so the funny thing is, Rolling Stone thought it was hilarious. Funny thing is, so there's a guy on death row no one's listening to. And there's two like entry level telemarketers making less than $20 an hour. You know, fast forward 20 years. And now he's not only out, proven his innocence, but he's in Rolling Stone magazine with his music that he's released. He's on panels with people like Ja Rule and Naughty by Nature and speaking about, you know, race and injustice in America. And he's, you know, building a profile now and being recognized by music people as an entertainer. So he always said, never, never give up. And I always say, we didn't get this far, it only get this far. So now we're an international PR, you know, those telemarketers are now an international award-winning PR team on the strength of what we learned to do to help that guy on death row who's no longer on death row. Somebody who thought we were, what are these people talking about? Now it's different. And he's in court this month to, you know, see how much money they're going to owe him to pretend they can give back some of that time that they can never do. No. But still, for the future, you know, obviously they need to make the next part of his life easier than in the last part was. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's really amazing. And so
crazy for a business podcast, right? Like,
it's interesting that what fired you up initially was this whole issue of injustice, that you were coming at that actually not as a career, but just as something you felt was very important. You know, you're coming at it with value and virtue, which is the only way I think you can find wisdom, honestly, because if you have any other agenda, forget it. You're going to be biased. You're going to see what you want to see. It's very tough to be open-minded, especially in today's world. But if you work for what is right in terms of values and virtues, then you're much more likely to be open-minded about it and probably more effective and successful. Did you have any special, looking back now, and I don't think it would be arrogant to say it, did you see in your previous life, you know, interest in communication and how to reach people at all? Or did that just happen?
Well, I've always wanted to be a writer. Guess what I was going to do when I was a little girl? I used to say I was going to be a writer. You know, but I was thinking more fiction and stuff. But at the same time, I also remember reading the Ottawa Citizen, which was our daily newspaper, like this when I was a little girl. Berlin Packaging acquires Consolidated Bottles, significant expansion in Canada. I would read whatever it is, like the newspaper, practicing how to read and look at the camera without looking down when I was really little. So I guess I thought it was something in me. I guess I liked the news, or I wanted to be, and somehow I was doing telemarketing. I forgot about all that. I never even thought about it until literally I had that 15-year, wait a minute, what? So I had the skills of writing. Like I knew, I've always been a good communicator, I guess. Never using it for work other than telemarketing, which I guess is communicating.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was a young activist. I've always been an activist. So I learned, I think all of my success in life, you know, business since those days, and even in the old activist days, has come from, I was empowered really young. I was not from wealth. I was not from privilege. I did not know famous people. I don't know how it happened that I learned that I had that voice and I had that. I'm grateful, you know, because I think all of my success in life has come not from having things to step on, but communication is, I read in Psychology Today recently, that communication is like the most important skill, more than math, more than anything, for success in life. And it makes sense, because if you can't,
it's certainly up there as one of the most critical
what
skills.
Would you say is another one that competes with it?
Well, let's just talk about communication. I wrote a book 20 years ago called Power Talk, The Art of Effective Communication. And why I did that, here I am, you know, a psychologist, went to the best schools, all of that, trained by the best clinicians and what have you. And here I am, you know, 10, 15 years into my career, and nobody had ever talked to me about communication skills. Right? And I'm looking at that, and just out of my experience, I'm looking at it and saying, no, this, you know, obviously challenging people head on, you know, really doesn't work. You've sort of got to meet them where they're at. How do you do that? And then I found there were some schools of thought and people who pioneered that, Milt Erickson being a famous psychiatrist who pioneered that. But even today, I look at that book and I'm kind of doing a second edition of it. It's still totally relevant today.
I want to read that.
Even more so than 20 years ago. It's so relevant. You can't, you know, you're not going to win anything by yelling and screaming at people. You know, that just is not going, it makes you feel good, but your ego is not communication.
That makes me think, if I can bring up another death penalty story, didn't mean to make this a death penalty show, but that was the previous part of my life for 20 years. But what you just said, though, I learned as a young activist, you know, by talking and listening to people, you cannot get more heated than some of what happens between the pro-death penalty people and the anti-death penalty people. And that's how we framed it in those days, because that's how you do when you're right in the middle of it. They're not just people that have a different opinion.
Binary.
These are the pro people. These are the anti. And it's the same with every cause or thing, right? So in those days, and that's how they would have framed us, look at those anti-death penalty people. Look at those pro-death. And it came down to, I'm talking about, so there was always fights back and forth in these whole pre-internet, pre-Facebook message boards and all that, where people were just ridiculous. You know, but one time I had the privilege of being asked to go speak in Texas. ABC TV flew me down to be the expert opinion on the death penalty on a show. And during that week, it's Texas, so they have a lot of executions. So there were going to be two executions the week I was going to be there. It was I was 30 years old. I think it was my second, third year of advocacy in that work. And all the people that I knew from the message boards, all the death penalty activists down there were very excited that Tracy from Canadian Coalition was coming, because we'd been mouthy, we'd made noise, we'd been able to, you know, I guess we'd got effective PR campaign that got media attention there, where they're standing outside of the executions, waving flags and praying, and the candles didn't do anything, right? So all of a sudden, we'd gotten all this media attention. That's why I was called down to be the expert opinion. They're all there. Oh, Tracy, you're here. You have to come. There's going to be a demo outside of the execution. You got to come for that. Of course, I should see that. I should be there for that work. And so I, you know, let my plane ticket an extra day, and I was going to stay longer. So there I am. I've been to a lot of demos. I've been an activist since I've been 14 years old. I've been to anti-war demos, not so much anymore. I mean, these days there's more effective ways to especially these days, these demos, the street demos are getting less effective. But, you know, I found more effective ways for me to act. But back in the day, you know, I've been to a million of them. So I've been to demos. That just felt like a demo. But it was so weird, because then every once in a while I'd be like, no, they're actually killing somebody in that room. Like, that's so weird. But anyway, so we were on this side with our signs, and a bunch of college kids are on that side with their like burn them all up signs, like the ones that are just, they're just kids, they don't really have a game in the fight, they're just, it's whatever. But then there's the people that are actually, you know, victims' family members who have who are not necessarily that victim's family members, but just they've their whole life has become, you know,
consumed,
making sure these people get killed, just the way our life at that time was, really stop these executions. They were really in that, right? So they would actually come out, that's right, kill them. Just like we were out there going, not a great idea. Like, this is why we think you shouldn't. So I remember being in Texas, Houston, Texas, like literally right in the middle of it, right in the heat, outside of the killing, you know, the place where they were going to kill someone at 6 o'clock. And the family members, I guess, of that prisoner were there, but they weren't the one, you know, I don't know who was all there, but I don't think any of the victims that were there were not like the victims of the person being killed, because they would have been in there. So just generic people who identify with victims, and then us people who are working against the death penalty. There's some of the people who are really angry with us. Like, they're screaming because they're, again, how not to think. They're thinking, look at those criminal lovers. Look at those people who love murderers. Look at that. Of course, no one's sitting there. We're not like in defense of that. You know, obviously we think it's obvious, but they don't see that so obvious because they're, like you say, how not to think. They're thinking of it differently. They framed it differently. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the point of my story is, one is yelling at us, and I'm like, hey, and all I don't remember how, but I deflated in that crazy, and 2 minutes before an execution, when everybody's heated up and everyone's freaking out, and I made a lady go, oh, and she just literally stopped, because she was yelling whatever was, oh, if your friends will stop killing our friends, just all this stuff. And I was like, hold on, stop with the rhetoric for a minute. I literally came up to her and I was like, stop for a minute. Okay, let's, like, you know, you're this, and I can't remember what exactly my words were. I don't want to say what, probably more effective than what I'm going to say now, but I was basically saying, that's not right. That's not what we're saying. You're saying that, but that's not what I'm saying. You're mad because you're afraid this guy's going to get out and he's going to, you know, and somehow suddenly we were able to frame within 2 seconds that really what she didn't like is, and it was a true, because in Texas, if they didn't get the death penalty, the only other option, they didn't have life in prison. And the only other option was they're going to be out in 20 years. Her actual fear wasn't about killing that guy. It was about, I'm afraid if we don't do this, that guy's going to be out killing our family and you don't care. So I was literally like, oh, hold on. So we actually agree there should be life in prison then? Because you're mad because there's no life in prison. Well, so am I, because you guys think that's the only alternative is the death penalty. Life prison is another whole other story. Mm-hmm. I'm not. But I mean, right away, she literally went, like, no word of a lie. She didn't just calm down a little. She went from blah, blah, blah to, oh, and she literally said, yeah, I agree with that. Just like that. And I said, see? So we both were yelling, we agree. We're not opposite. I'm not what you think, and you're not what I think. And another thing that was similar, again, in that world, when it turned over into Facebook, and some of the people who used to argue and yell and scream on the old issues things suddenly came to Facebook, and suddenly someone comes in and she starts same thing, yelling like the way they used to do and all that. Oh, you this and that, you criminal lover, you. But and I'm like, we're all, and then I suddenly, I don't know what made me say this, like I should be a psychologist. Suddenly it just hit me and I said, hold on a sec, we've been going back and forth for 3 days, you're never going to convince me and I'm never going to convince you. Just stop for a sec. I said, there's no, so we're hating on each other right now. You think I'm horrible. I bet you, and I don't know why I said this, turned out it was true. I said, I bet you, if we stop talking about this for a week and we talk about other things, I bet you anything we agree on more things than we disagree on. This was a less polarized time when everyone had an agenda, which they had the 10 points. But I was like, I bet you we agree. I said, so I'm going to friend you on Facebook. And you're going to be my friend on Facebook, I said. And for a week, we're not going to talk about that. I'm not going to post on your thing. If you post about kill them all, I'm not going to say a word. If I don't, we're going to stay away from that. And I bet you we're going to, do you know she agreed? And we're friends 8 years later on Facebook. And do you know what else? We are so simpatico. Mm-hmm. We have 90% of things in common, like things you would never even imagine. Mm-hmm. Things that most people do not have in common. We have in common. But we were never have seen that, because I was seeing her as a crazy person who wants to kill them all, and I was just a criminal lover. We weren't seeing or hearing what each other was actually saying.
Yeah,
or where we were coming from.
Yeah, and even on the issues where you thought there were 180 degrees, you probably weren't, right?
Yeah.
As you said in that previous example, there's misperceptions of it. You're just assuming the worst case and that's not true of either party. And that's
and we both learned that lesson that time. You know, we both were like, look at us standing here. All these people are yelling and they're yelling. And we just found out we're on the same side.
very, very, very important, you know, and what that takes really is the ability to say, well, let's just kind of sit down together and talk. And this is not the first time on the show I've referenced the first essay I had to write in my undergraduate psychology class at the University of Nottingham, which was, how may intergroup conflict be reduced? And the answer is by getting together and talking with each other, right? Because then all the myths and notions and BS you have about people disappears, and suddenly they become real people, and you got a lot more in common with them. Exactly. And all like that. But you know, we live behind this veneer of, I don't know what it is, but it's falsehood.
And that's the thing too. I mean, someone who could have a really bad opinion, like an objectionable opinion that is not okay, that I cannot accept, you know what I mean? They could have, you could still dig deeper, because especially in these polar, like we were saying earlier, especially in these times, so many people are confused and they don't even see where they're, what paths they're going down. So as an activist, sometimes I see where someone is going, they may not even realize they're on that path. I used to be like, oh, well, you know what? Ask that race, God. Hold on, now I'm going to check a little bit. Where are you going with that? Why did you think that? Because hold on, we respect each other, right? So let me tell you why I think that's problematic for a minute. And then if you're like, well, that's it. No, I'm still, you know, okay, then we don't have much in common. I'm not going to try to, you know, mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm realizing now that the way the mind works, especially these days, the way the social media is, the way messaging is coming through, people are stressed and distressed right now with the COVID and whatever, and all the false information from one side. I don't even know. I'm not saying, I don't know what information is real or not, because I'm like, I'm just doing my work. And I, you know, all these things that none of us know, whether it's about COVID,
right,
whether it's about
you know, politics or anything,
whether, yeah, you know, and I follow all the, I'm not, you know, I'm just saying people are confused because they're hearing crazy stuff on both sides, and then they're hearing crazy about the crazy, and then someone denying the crazy, and they just have no idea is real. And then people they trust, people, because the scary thing that I'm finding this year is that people that I always thought were like absolutely sensible and, you know,
reasonable people, yeah,
and they're just sharing the most bizarre things, mm-hmm. And they're like, oh yeah, that's, and I'm like, whoa. So as a publicist, that's scary. I mean, that's scary, because now I realize other people are as good as me at messaging. I only take on good things, but there are other people as good as me. It's that easy? I mean, I'm going to start a cult of complete insanity based on, like, you know, if people need to really check, take a deep breath and figure out where information is coming from and does it make sense, and realize everybody's confused and really understand how to read things. And like,
absolutely. We absolutely need more discernment, not just going in there to confirm. And that is a problem. With social media, because social media exists for those companies to sell you to advertisers, they are manipulating you. They're not looking to give you a balanced view of the world or anything. They're just trying to manipulate you. So
look
they
what
can,
we get as a result.
And that's what we get. Yeah, and have you seen the docudrama, The Social Dilemma?
I did. Yeah, I watched that as soon as it came out. That was.
And any listeners who haven't, I would really recommend watching
it. It's on Netflix right now.
Yeah, it is on Netflix right now. It is excellent. It's really, really excellent. And it shows the problem that we have with social media. That yes, it's nice. You can connect with people you haven't seen for years. You know, I've connected with school friends I haven't seen for ages and family members. But at the same time, it really enables anyone to be a media outlet. And what's interesting, I find, is people railing against mainstream media, which, you know, fair enough, but they're not railing against
the crazy people,
crazy people putting out uncensored, unsubstantiated ideas. So, you know, it works both ways, I guess. Yeah, so you've got this sort of natural, what's interesting about your story, Tracy, that I really like, is that what I see happening is you're coming from your values, your interests, your passions, and that's how you got into it. And then married those up with the skills that you have, rather than specifically setting out to, oh, I'm going to be a publicist. And so that's very interesting. I'm sure it makes you different from that perspective.
And I never went to school for it either.
Right, which is good. You know, which is good, because what you would have been told and taught in school, you know, 20 years ago probably isn't relevant now.
That's true. I never really thought of that. Yeah, what a whole different world now anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And that's actually true. Just think how much the world's changed in 30 years in every way. You went to school as a doctor, you know, as a medical student 30 years ago. Today, that environment's quite different.
You know, that is a good point. We are all self-taught right now in the world that we're living in. Because unless you came out of school like yesterday, you know, unless you came out of school in the last 5 years, even then. But especially in PR, like even then in 5 years, I mean, things have changed drastically, obviously, with the internet. And then things changed drastically again with the Twitterverse, you know, because now everybody has more access to reporters, too. That's easy. They tweet at each other. They have, it's not a pitch, but they have different ways to get a chat. So, yeah, and that's, if you can't find a reporter, you can always tweet at them. You can, so, they, yeah, I hadn't even thought of that. It's true. Wow. So we are all self-taught. It doesn't matter if you went to school or not. That's all old news. Whatever they would
conventional wisdom is not either conventional anymore or wisdom.
Really? Other than like how to write a press release, which you could just, again, you could find that out on AltaVista like I did, right?
So. Oh, yeah. You can Google that and you'll get, and I have in the past.
I did too.
I mean, it's just fascinating. But what is so interesting is that you are sort of living your passion, really, you know? And, you know, that's awesome. So I think that's great. So tell us about how that's evolved. Now you've moved, well, you started off in this activist way and you've moved to more, I guess, conventional PR. Tell us about what
except for I still don't want to go work for a big, I don't like corporations so much, like giant corp, because I find it really hard to do PR by consensus. There needs to be one person. I find whenever I work for something that has a board of this or that, you know, a media opportunity comes in, they want to schedule a meeting to discuss the opportunity and then pick which guy's going to answer and then discuss the messaging. And then by then, I'm like, you know, guys, that's all. I hope y'all had fun and that someone else took that, you know. They were quicker. They answered. We're done. So I mean, I can do corporate, you know, but number one, it has to be, I mean, I'm a corporation now, so I don't need it. Right. So like, I don't, but I stay with things where they're, I don't have to control your messaging. I'm doing the messaging for you. But I mean, where I can have faith that the messaging is going to continue to be something that I can stand behind. So I don't want to go work for a government or even a political party that I may or may not support, because the whole nature of the beast there, they have to, it can't always be, they're not activists or politicians, right? So whatever it is, like, or big, so I work with creatives, obviously, which is, you know, I have filmmakers, I have tons of writers, I have public speakers, I have artists and singers, all that stuff. And then people are often more surprised by, because it's funny how all corporate, you know, giant corporations, they all have their communications department, which is PR. But entrepreneurs of all kinds, 80% of them have no concept, no understanding. They don't, even in this world with media, they don't picture themselves being the one being interviewed. They don't know how to break that code. They know advertising, but they don't know media. So I'm forever, other than when I'm on podcasts or people who know them, they're like, oh, wow, hire her. But often I'm working with people who see what I've done for others. And they're like, wow, would PR be something that would work for me? How could that work for me? And I explain to them, I don't care if you're a, you know, butcher, baker, candlestick maker, you clean toilets for a living. There's knowledge you have that could be in me that we don't know. There's stuff you could be talking to your industry in media for your industry, or there could be, you know, when we talk thought leadership, when you're explaining to those of us outside different things that might affect us that we don't know of what you do. So I have right now like a podiatrist, a diversity expert, a psychologist, a luxury real estate agent, a neuromarketing expert, a marketing, SEO marketing guy, a mortgage guy. So these are like, people be like, what? Those aren't celebrities. No, they're experts. Every one of them is an expert in something. And even like when the SEO marketing guy first hired me, like SEO, like meaning SEO, like website and SEO, I thought, is that one going to be a challenge? How am I going to get media? But, you know, turned out and that I looked for it and I got him more media in the next 2 weeks than any one of my other clients. Because once I started looking for those opportunities, there were a ton. There was a ton of business, you know, across industries, talking to their people about how they can better this and that. I got him in an article about examples of the best dentist website. You know, if you're looking for stuff, there's stuff. So, you know, there's always opportunities. And that's what I do, is elevate and celebrate what people are doing now. They don't have to be celebrities, regular people with either good messages, something they're trying to do in the world, or just entrepreneurs, small businesses, trying to, you know, improve their lot in life, and they have an idea. And that's what's fun, is way more fun than corporate. And I also have the Hollywood projects and the big money projects. But really, at the end of the day, way more fun is helping somebody build their dream for real. Mm-hmm. So like, whether it's a creative that where we were celebrating, look, we got you in, now everyone bought this, somebody's film is getting made and I'm watching that joy, or their business, which I never used to think about as a young activist. Like, business wasn't of interest to me, entrepreneurs, whatever. But now I see it a little differently. Like, now I had the thought the other day, which sounds crazy to old activist me. It sounds crazy to old activist me, but I've been thinking about, I want to be a job creator. I want to start building, you know, jobs I can hire. And then I thought, well, that's sort of, and I wasn't trying, I was literally thinking, that's where I want to go now in a positive way. In my head, I'm thinking, that's kind of an activist thing that I can do too. Because if I'm changing someone's life by giving them like a really amazing entry into like what I'm doing, you know, mm-hmm. and the possibility to make money instead of working for $15 an hour, which is where I started when I started this, man, right. $20 an hour sounded like a good rate to me.
Yeah, so many are.
Yes. I look at this now, the old freelance site that I literally, today I went back and I was looking at the freelance site I started on 8 years ago, and I was doing excellent work for $20 an hour, getting people, my early, trying to build, because you never think of an entrepreneur is, you know, you're scared, you don't know how to price yourself, so you'll do everything for low. And, you know, now I laugh, I'm like, oh boy, I hope nobody sees me on that and thinks they can come and hire me at those rates. So I just went in and changed it today. I'm like, okay. 8 years ago, update, rates are a little different now.
Today,
still reasonable. I still keep packages that are reasonable, though, for entrepreneurs, because again, since I'm always educating people who don't know what PR is, they're not going to take a leap with $3,000 a month, 3 months minimum, because they don't even know what it is.
Right.
And they can't even pick. So I say to people, under $1,000, take away your advertising budget for a month. For under $1,000, give me 1 month. At the end of that month, all my work is referral and repeat customers, 80% of it, unless I find someone interesting on LinkedIn and say, hey, you know. But generally, it's all we, so give me a month. And, you know, not only will you get a bunch of media after that, but you will understand in ways you can't hear on a podcast how you can be framed. You'll see the strategies. You see what we pitch, how, you know, what we change you into. What we, you know, it's, we don't change you into anything, but you'll see, wow, I really am. People always say to me, wow, you made me sound so good. No, I just literally put together everything you do and say, you can speak in a compelling, like, but people don't see themselves. Again, they're just here.
Yes.
And those people are up there.
Yes,
no, that can be you too, in a responsible way. Back to that thing about some people aren't good with their media. If someone is not good at using their social media for the greater good, I'm certainly not going to be giving them a platform, you know, to put, to spew crap into the bigger world. So, you know, I'm heart-based and ethically based and,
That's right. And that's awesome. And they should be. Now, talking about social media and marketing, I mean, everyone gets flooded when they go on a social media platform with people telling you, oh, this is how you need to do social media today. Oh, this is how you do it. Oh, the old ideas have gone. I mean, all that, you know, sort of typical BS stuff. Do you have a, you know, without giving away any particular secrets as such, but what do you think about that? I'm sure there are different ways of maximizing your opportunities on social media, and they aren't necessarily all about building a funnel and all of that stuff, right?
No, I'm definitely not. I'm not even an expert in that. Right. My socials aren't even like, I'm not about building the following. I outsource that out. I'm about the real media and not so much the influence online, right?
Right.
So, but there are real media opportunities. If you want to like stop listening to this podcast right now or finish, get off and be like, okay, what can I actually do to improve myself with this girl's talking about, right? So number one, I'll give you some real sources and they're free. Anybody can go and do, but before you even go and look at them, remember, there's a reason I always say life's a pitch. That's a P, not a B, right? Don't approach media. Don't approach podcasts. Or, you know, hey, unless you really have that one little paragraph, more about Tracy, more about Howard, more about, you know, but it's not your bio. It's not just a long list of your accomplishments. It's a compelling, you know, explain, obviously, as you're, you know, why you're an expert, but also more to it, and give them something like, I would be good to talk, Tracy can talk about, you know, building your self-esteem so you can build your brand. Howard can talk about how thinking in the wrong way can, you know, stop you in your tracks for success, you know, where they go, oh, that sounds like a good segment. So you're gifting media with content instead of looking for free advertising, right? And so once you have that, that could work for media advisories, press releases that you're putting out about something you're doing. But again, editorial versus advertorial, very careful, be very strict with yourself, edit yourself before you send it out. But a good entryway before you have to start thinking about writing press releases and stuff is go to things like Source Model, which is a free website in Australia, and Harrow, Help a Reporter Out. I don't tell most of my clients about this because you can go off and mess yourself up as easily as you can make the connects, right? But if you're good and you understand what I'm saying strategically about writing your pitch and understanding things like Source Bottle and Harrow, what they are is media, and it'll blow your mind, because media from across the world. This month, I got one client in Reader's Digest and New York Times, 1 month, responding mm-hmm. to Harrow requests. Mm-hmm. They're looking for, in that example, was New York Times is looking for an etiquette expert who can talk about the etiquette of what we're doing now, of Zoom calls. Mm-hmm. I've got an etiquette expert. She also is an expert of etiquette at work specifically. So my pitch there isn't just, I've got an etiquette expert. I've got an etiquette expert who speaks to businesses, who regularly talks about etiquette in the workplace, who has a great answer about your Zoom. So you make that connection. So now she's definitely the expert. And now it's on her, is the quote good? Does the quote fit in with what they're looking for? So they won't all, you don't get every pitch, but it's a numbers game. You have to answer those quickly because they're not going to go back and rewrite their article.
Right. You wrote exactly. Fast in. Yep.
So the deadline, forget to do it as quick as you can. Yep. And mostly in some cases they're taking the whole thing and being lazy and inserting your thing. But in most cases, they just want to know what your angle is, what you're going to say. So don't overthink it. Just be like, I'm an expert. My name's Tracy. Here's what I would say to that. Do you want me to rewrite, you know, a more polished version? Please let me know. Boom, boom, boom. They pick you that you, you know, you start to add all those things. If you're a writer, think about Medium. A lot of people still don't know that Medium you can actually go and write on. It looks like Huffington Post. Mm-hmm. And please write responsibly.
Yes.
Don't buy all the propaganda before you start writing it. Add to the propaganda, but you can actually create what looks like thought leadership, early thought leadership, by putting out what you're thinking and your thought, and that alone can be your calling card to media. Read my articles on Medium. There you go. You're an expert, right?
So. Yeah, and before social media really took off, I used what was available then, which was sort of PR, Newswire, and their professional services. I did exactly that. And it was a lot easier to do that because it was a much smaller universe then in terms of the ability to do that. And I mean, I got myself on all sorts of stuff. I mean, I got myself on 2020, The View, all sorts of coverage by responding to requests. People are writing stories, investigating stories. And if you can give them some genuine insight into them from your own work, you know, that works for you. So while we're talking about this, and how do people reach you if they're interested in learning more about your services, Tracy?
So when people ask me that, I always go back. First, I want to tell people when they're on the internet, before they come find me, to go find that. Remember that guy, Jimmy Dennis?
He's been
He's got an amazing song called Tears This Year that just came out, and everybody had a really rough year. And you know, his thing was, you know, never, never give up. So this is like his gift to all of us. Don't give up. Tears This Year, move on. I want to really refer people to that. That's not paid work. It never was. That's the work in my heart. I always joke, I've been talking about that guy for 20 years. I'm not going to stop now. So go check out his music now that he's free and he's, you know, can now that he can speak, listen. He's got a voice. So listen. But then when you're done with that important stuff and you want to reach out to me, Tracy Lamori, lamorimedia.com, or you can find me on Facebook, Tracy Lamori on Facebook. On Instagram, it's Tracy Lamori PR Media. And yeah, I'm very accessible. Happy to have, if anybody's listening to this and thinks that sounds great, but I just don't believe that it I could be that one in the media. I'm happy to continue this conversation with a 20, half an hour phone consult, whatever. At the end of it, you're going to see what I mean, that we mean yes, you, yes, you. So if you think you might be interested in that, I can make it happen and I can make options to make it affordable. It doesn't have to be me though. You can talk to other publicists. If I've opened up your mind about this, just don't leave all these opportunities on the table. And when you do talk to publicists, make sure they understand and are in affinity with what you're doing. Cause I feel like ethically you should, we're all good. We can all take on anything, but you should really understand and feel it. So watch if they're excited, watch if they care about, watch if they interrupt you with an idea. Those are the things you want to look for, you know,
find yes, someone absolutely.
Who gets what you're doing and who gets you. Or come to me, because I would do all those things.
Yes. Yeah, no, you would. I can tell that right off the bat. You absolutely would do that. Now, you have a book coming out some point this year called Get Repped. Is that going to be the title?
Yep, Get Repped, Build Your Brand with Effective Public and Media Relations. And it's supposed to sound a little get ripped, get wrapped, you know. Like,
yeah, ripped. Like yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? But attention getting. But yeah, that's what it is. And the story behind that is the publishing company asked me to write the book on public relations. As one of my clients owns that publishing company. And now, originally, she was my first client, one of my first, when I was a freelancer. And we made her business book, The 30% Solution, an Amazon bestseller. Wow. And then she decided for her future one, she wasn't going to go with a publishing company. She was going to self-publish and we were going to market and promote it. And then from there, she ended up starting a publishing company called Propriety Publishing. And now she's got, I think, 30 books across, and it's mostly soft skills business. Mm-hmm. So PR mm-hmm. is perfect. So yeah, and she would like really like me to get that finished. The cover's ready, the ISBN number is ready.
All right.
The rest of the words. I'm good at words. I just need to commit.
You just gotta make sure you have the time, right? So do it. Yep. That's great. So Get Repped, we'll look for that. And perhaps when that comes back out or comes out, we'll have you back on to talk more specifically about that. But what I'm hearing you talking about and what seems to have sort of come across from you is authenticity, right? You're not trying to play a game. You're not mirror. It's not smoke and mirrors. You're not trying to manipulate. You're trying to be authentic. You're trying to find outlets that want your authenticity, right? You're not trying to manipulate them or play them or what have you.
No, I just want to find stories worth telling, not as a journalist, but people, voices.
Right.
But how, you know, like not the journalist story, but I thought of the phrase, it sounds like a PR phrase, but elevate and celebrate. It just came out one day because I always say I elevate my clients. But then I said, no, I elevate and celebrate. And that's what I do. They're worth celebrate the people that are deserving of elevation, whether it's small business, just a smart idea, just a person that's got through a lot. And now they're like, no, I'm going to make this work. I'm going to be successful, you know, or like I have a client who, one of my author clients, she, you know, her book is about finding a new life after widowhood. So she speaks about what do you do after widowhood and divorce or, you know, so that's an awesome message. I never thought about it, but she does really good things in the world. She helps people. So I help her help people. So whether it's an issue that I cared about before, everything that I take on is something where I'm like, that's awesome. And I like it. And I want to help, you know, so I'm privileged that I get the chance to. And that could be anybody's small business, you know, just helping you make your way in the world and say goodbye to corporate nightmare or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
I like helping people do those things. I think
absolutely.
That I have skills to do that.
Yeah, and really what you're talking about is purposeful and meaning, and you're manifesting that in what you do. You're not just doing a job. This is meaningful work to you, and I really appreciate that you've been able to fashion yourself that way after all the things that you took to get you there. So that's been great. So Tracy Lamourie, Lamourie. You can find her on the web. Lamourie PR Media is correct. Am I right in that? Yes.
On Instagram, yeah.
Yeah, Lamourie PR Media. And thank you so much. It's been refreshing to talk to somebody in this business who is really interested in the authenticity and getting the peace and the message across rather than necessarily worrying about manipulating people and trying to get more, you know, reads or eyes or looks or likes or any of that that stuff, and that's where it needs to be. So I really appreciate that. So thanks for your time. I know you're busy. Hopefully you'll be a little busier after this podcast, but
happy to get that kind of busy. That's my fun too. Build a life you love, and you're busy is actually, people said, what'd you do over Christmas? I was like, I worked. Everything was in lockdown. I just stayed at my desk and worked. They thought it was sad. I thought it was great.
Yeah, because we don't get too busy because you got to finish your book first. So
true.
And we'll have you back when you finish your book. But for now, thank you so much for being on the show and giving us your valuable time, Tracy.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.